21-2795, Robert Allen Schumonte versus City of Adrian, Michigan, et al. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Huffman for the defendant appellant.
Good morning. May it please the court, Christian Huffman on behalf of defendants, Officer Jeremy Powers and the City of Adrian. If I could please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
Thank you. As the court knows, this case involves essentially three different claims by plaintiffs, the first being a Fourth Amendment unreasonable use of force claim against Officer Powers. The district court, in response to our motion for summary disposition, said that there are questions of fact regarding whether plaintiff was actively resisting arrest as opposed to passively resisting, and whether the amount of force that Officer Powers used was reasonable.
When did he arrest him?
When he told him to turn around and put his hands behind his back.
That's an arrest?
I believe that is would signify to a reasonable person.
He didn't say you're under arrest. He just said stop and put your hands behind your back.
Yes, he said turn around and put your hands behind your back. My understanding from the case law is that there are no magic words that a police officer has to use to signify that someone's under arrest. He doesn't have to specifically say you're under arrest. He has to use words or conducts that would signal to a reasonable
prior to that, he told him to get back in his car.
He did, and plaintiff disregarded that, said he wasn't going to leave, so he says, okay, go stand on the other side of the parking lot. Plaintiff only did that for a second, then he started pacing around, and then he told Officer Powers, get doing what you're doing so we can get out of here. As soon as Officer Powers says, don't tell me what to do, he starts marching towards his truck. Officer Powers, when a...
That's not the way I saw the video. What I saw was he was backing away from where the officer was. In other words, he was moving toward where his daughter was. The officer told him, get over there where your daughter, and he was backing up using a lot of disrespectful language, but he was unarmed, not posing any threat to the officer. And the officer runs over there and starts using the taser on him. That's what's on the video.
I respectfully disagree that that's just what the video shows. When plaintiff first gets out of his truck, he says, you're the one that had the problem with me, you got a problem with me now.
Oh, I wasn't talking about what happened when he first got out of the truck, but leading up to the use of force later, he tells the man to go stand over for his daughter. And he seems to be doing exactly that because he's backing up and moving toward where his daughter is, using a lot of bad language, but he's not posing any threat to the officer. That's when the man and the officer exchanging words, and the officer runs over and starts using the taser on the man. That's what's on the video.
I disagree with Your Honor that is what the video shows.
The video shows what it shows, whether you agree with it or not. That's what's on the video.
Well, I understand, and I disagree that is what's on the video. He tells him to leave. He says no. He says, okay, go stand over there. He goes by his daughter, but he's only there for about a second. Then he starts pacing back and forth. When he starts pacing back and forth, Officer Powers calls for backup, and he says, call backup. I don't give a F word.
He's not pacing back and forth. He's backing up across the lot to where his daughter is. That's what's on the video. And we're not going to get anywhere if you and I disagree with what the video plainly shows. I don't have any reason to misrepresent what's on the video.
I think the difference is Your Honor is talking about later in the video.
I'm talking about when the officer decides to engage in physical force against the plaintiff.
Yes. He says turn around and put your hands behind your back. Plaintiff doesn't comply.
So that's later after he tases he starts shooting off the taser.
This occurred before he shot the taser. As plaintiff is walking towards his truck, he says, don't get in the vehicle.
Right, now that happened.
Forward. He says, turn around and put your hands behind your back, signifying that he's going to detain him. Plaintiff doesn't comply, in fact, takes a step towards Officer Powers. Officer Powers reaches out to grab his arms. Plaintiff pulls back from him, and that's when he starts retreating across the parking lot. And as he's doing that, Officer Powers produces and shows him the taser and says, get down on the ground, put your hands behind your back, twice. And he still didn't comply. And at that point, plaintiff says, go ahead. And that's when Officer Powers tases him.
So is your position that Powers was walking away from the officer? Sorry, Powers is the officer? I'm
confused. Powers is the officer. Powers,
his shoemate was walking away from Powers?
Yes.
When Powers decided to tase shoemate?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it's a situation like...
Why wouldn't that be excessive force if shoemate is walking away from Powers?
Because this court said in Cockrell versus Cincinnati, when an officer has informed someone that they want to detain them, and that person engages in flight, moving away from the officer, there is no clearly defined right of that defendant not to be tased.
What was the legal reason that the officer had to detain the man?
Because he was obstructing Officer Powers' attempt to perform the inventory search of plaintiff's daughter's car.
And how was he doing that? All I saw him do was castigate the officer and use disrespectful language, but he didn't interfere with the officers. The officer was going through the car.
Well, it caused the officer to have to stop doing the inventory search because plaintiff comes into the parking lot revving his engine and parks right next to where he's trying to work and gets out and immediately starts verbally accosting him. So he could no longer keep his attention on the car. He had to focus it on plaintiff. And at that point, that's when he tries to call for backup to have.
Well, initially he was going, the man got out of the car, it looked as though he was going over to where his daughter was. And the officer and the plaintiff start arguing. The man starts walking back toward his vehicle. The officer starts yelling, don't go to the vehicle. And he, the plaintiff complied with that. He didn't go to the vehicle when he was ordered not to, but the two of them continued arguing. Subsequently, I guess the argument intensified, and the officer ended up tasing the man, even though the man was not, he wasn't moving physically toward the officer, wasn't posing any threat, was unarmed. And in fact, when he was tased, he was backing up toward where his daughter was, which is what he had been told to do. Is any of that incorrect?
Well, at that point, after he'd been told to leave and hadn't complied, he'd been told to go stand over by his daughter, and he complied for a second, but then he basically disregarded that command. Then he was started walking towards his truck, is told, don't go near the truck. He disobeys that command. He's told, turn around and put your hands behind your back. He disobeys that command. The officer then tries to grab his arms.
Well, officers
pulls away
don't
from
have a right to command you to do something unless you're doing something illegal.
Well, I think when...
I mean, they just can't come up and say, I'm a cop, put up your hands.
Well, that's not what occurred here. The officer...
Well, I don't know. I struggle... I kept looking and thinking, what's the crime that the individual plaintiff here committed before your client shot him?
The officer had someone pulled over. He has his car parked right in front of her car with his lights going. Plaintiff knew he was searching.
And this guy's daughter. He comes, she calls him, he comes. Nothing unusual about that, right? I mean, you would too, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And so he pulls up next to his daughter.
I
That's not a crime. These two had problems before. They exchange comments that aren't nice, but they're not crimes.
I think when you know an officer is conducting an investigation, which he knew.
How do you know he was conducting an, what inventory was he taking?
He was searching the vehicle.
For what reason?
To make sure there was no narcotics or anything else like that in it before they had it impounded. He was conducting an inventory search.
I see, and the layperson knew that.
Plaintiff admitted he knew. That's what he was doing.
He didn't tell him, stand over here while I search your daughter's car.
He said, stand over there, don't interfere with what I'm doing.
He didn't say that last phrase, but he did say, stand over someplace else.
He did say, don't interfere with what I'm doing.
What was he doing that a layperson would know?
He's doing an inventory search of the vehicle. And plaintiff knew that, said, do what you have to do with the vehicle so we can get out of here.
I don't know. I've upheld a lot of qualified immunity cases. I've never seen one where the person that was shot has his hands up in what is the classical surrender mode, and somebody shoots him.
I don't think, in my personal opinion, when a police officer has his lights on and he's got a car pulled over, that we can have citizens just rev their engines, pull right up next to him, and start cursing at them, and when they're told, leave me alone so I can do what I'm doing, they're pacing around, acting erratically, and start moving towards them. And when the officer says in that situation, turn around, put your hands behind your back, I don't think people can just disregard it and flee away. I think Cockrell versus Cincinnati.
But if it was as Judge Clay says, he was moving away, then you're what you say falls, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he would be guilty of an Eighth Amendment.
Well, it depends on when you mean moving away. He was backing up as after Officer Powers says, turn around, put your hands behind your back, and reach to restrain his arms. He pulls away. That's when he starts backing away.
And puts his hands up.
I don't recall him putting his hands up. I recall him making hand gestures. I don't think that they were I'm giving up gestures. There was a use of the finger and in pointing at him.
But at that point, your client was in no danger.
Officer Powers?
Yes.
I don't know that he could have known that at the time. He had never frisked plaintiff or Mr. Shoemate. He didn't know if he had a weapon on him or not. That's actually why he did not want him to go back to the truck. Because he told him to get in the truck and leave, he refused. And then after pacing around and shouting profanity, and he tells him, do what you have to do so we can get out of here, and Officer Powers says, don't tell me what to do, plaintiff just puts his head down and starts marching towards the truck. At that point, he doesn't know why he's going to the vehicle. He said he thought he might have had a weapon in there. I know it turned out that
there's an awful lot of thoughts and maybes and I guess, but as he's walking away, going back, complying with the original order, I said to my clerks, where's the crime? Where's the arrest?
Which original order are you talking about? At the time that
as he got out of the car, I think he told him to get back in the car.
After he tells him, turn around, put your hands behind your back, and he starts moving away, he's not moving towards where his daughter was. He's backing away, actually towards the entrance of the CVS. His daughter was off to the other side. He was moving away, trying to evade Officer Powers' attempts to restrain him at that point. And I believe that is clear from the video.
That's not clear. The video shows him backing across the lot to where his daughter was standing. That's what's on the video.
I think it depends on what point of the video you're talking about. When he tells him, turn around, put your hands behind your back, reaches for his arms, and he pulls away, he's backing across the parking lot, yes, but he's not going to where his daughter was.
Yes, he was. That's what, and the officer told him to go over there where your daughter is. That was one of the many confusing and contradictory orders that the officer was spouting out. He was telling the man to do all kinds of things.
And plaintiff was not complying with that.
So if there are factual questions in terms of looking at the video, wasn't the district court correct in denying qualified immunity?
Well, they said that there was, he believes that a reasonable jury could find that plaintiff was passively as opposed to actively resisting, and that a reasonable jury could find that his use of force was unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think under this court's case law, Cockrell, Hagans, Rudloff, I don't think that there is any question that plaintiff was actively resisting.
Okay. And we've taken you way beyond your allotted time, so we'll give you your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Sure.
Good morning. May it please the court, Robert Kamenek. I represent the plaintiff appellee. Judge Moore, after you just hit the nail on the head. With the dialogue that we just had and the comments of the court, the question is whether or not there is a question of fact here. All Judge Lawson found is there is a question of fact. If this video can be interpreted any other way than what the court has already described, I would be surprised. It's interesting here that when you look at this case and the facts compared to other cases, much of which has already been brought out already, there was no warning given. My client was backing up. His hands weren't up like this, Judge Heimrich, but they were here. I just looked at the video again. But they're out. They're not behind. They're not reaching in his pocket. None of that's going on, okay? He's clearly retreating. Since the briefs have been filed, you have the case of LaPlante that Judge Clay wrote, the opinion here. And that was released on April 8. And in that case, the court found that there was no qualified immunity under similar facts. But one of the things that Judge Clay has already brought up is when, in that case, this court ruled, that then when there was a conflict about what was going on in terms of the commands, that alone was enough to create a genuine issue of material fact here. And as the court has already brought up, the commands given by Officer Powers, are conflicting. At one point in time, the plaintiff is told to get into his truck. Then when he tries to go back to get into his truck, he's told not to go back to get into his truck, and the like.
Well, but isn't that logical that the police officer could change his mind depending on how things are unfolding? So originally the officer said, get back in your truck so you're not going to interfere with your daughter's car's impoundment. And then things happen, and then the officer gets worried that Shoemate is going to go back to his truck to get a weapon. So then the officer says, no, don't go to your truck. I mean, there is a logic to that.
There is a logic, and I would agree with the court. Because as events unfold, there's different dynamics that occur. I've got you on that. But in LaPlante, the court just released on April 8, the court found that where there is a question of whether the plaintiff understood the commands as they were given, or whether the plaintiff was given sufficient opportunity to comply with the commands, and this is from Judge Clay's opinion, that alone is a genuine issue of material fact. And at an absolute minimum, Your Honor, with the caveat that you just provided, there's still that question of fact out there. Not just whether they were conflicting, but whether the plaintiff understood them directly and whether the plaintiff was given sufficient time to react to them. Question of fact, and again, LaPlante is a qualified immunity case. I could not find another case in my research where somebody's backing up like they are under these circumstances, saying, please don't tase me, especially somebody who's elderly like this. When you have a policy by the city of Adrian, you don't tase elderly people. That's all in the brief. And backing up is probably the key point of this case. There's no aggressive behavior whatsoever.
Well, there is a lot of angry language.
Agreed. I'm always a little bit chagrined to hear language used by people, and I can admit that even with my own clients. But language alone isn't enough. And the court asked the question earlier about whether or not there was any any aggressive movement outside of that. Was there anything physical? There wasn't at all. And so accordingly, at an absolute minimum, there's a genuine issue of material fact. I think it's very telling that when you look at the video, nobody ever told my client, you're under arrest. The whole notion that some reason my client should infer magically that he was going to be placed under arrest, that alone seems to be definitive. So you've got a situation where...
But isn't it logical? Your opponent argues that your client was told to turn around and put his hands behind his back. What else, what other reason would somebody be told that other than that they're going to be handcuffed?
Just to stay out of the way, Your Honor. Nothing more. Just so ostensibly, according to the officer's testimony, that you aren't interfering with the inventory.
So you could be handcuffed and not be under arrest?
No. But the point is, he wasn't handcuffed at that point. I understand the point of the court. But again, you go back to the whole notion of, let's look at it from the perspective of my client. You know, we're used to police officers, we're attorneys and judges and the like, we've been through these cases. How does he know? How does he know that he's being, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt.
So I guess I was moving ahead. Your opponent argued in front of us that once Shoemate was told, turn around and put your hands behind your back, and Shoemate starts walking away, that Officer Powers could immediately tase Shoemate. And your opponent, I think, cites Cockrell as the case authorizing that.
No, I...
How do you respond to that?
I disagree. There's no physical behavior of aggression, and somebody is simply retreating, and there's nothing more than that other than the verbal. The verbal's going on, I agree. No, you can't tase. I thought the Goodwin case went into that, and I think Your Honor was on that case, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I was.
Yes, and that kind of segues, and I don't mean to get off topic, but to the clearly established, I don't think there's any question about clearly established here. If the court has questions on that, I will address those. Again, I would ask the court to once again look at LaPlante. I think it creates at an absolute minimum questions of fact. I think that at the end of the day, when you look at not whether or not the use of force was warranted, but here the question is whether the degree of force that was used was warranted. And that was a taser. When you go through, and we have provided this as Exhibit 6, below, and I can give you all the page IDs. When you go through the City of Adrian's policies, this officer violated almost every one of them in terms of use of a taser. And again, there's a couple here that I think that the court, I mentioned one earlier, but you're not to use a taser in an elderly person.
How do they define elderly?
They don't define it. If you look at the video, with due respect to my client, I think you can tell he's elderly. I hope I didn't offend anybody in the courtroom. I can say that because I'm 66 years old.
I was asking that somewhat facetiously.
Okay, fair enough. Yes. But there's policies and procedures that are very precise here. And there's the policy, they have a use of force policy. They talk about when you can use a taser, when you can't. One of the things I think is very interesting as you go through the video is there's a policy saying at some point in time you have to stop using a taser if you've got the person under control, reasonably under control. Strike that, under control, doesn't say reasonably. And that's the other problematic part of this case. The man's on the ground. You have the photo at page 8 of my brief. It's not an open hand, it's a fist. And if you look at my client, he's prone on his back, on the asphalt, and then his head goes up on the curb. And all I thought about, and again, I didn't write this brief, first time I saw this video, there's only two words that came to my mind, broken neck. And what happens? The officer's pounding away on him. And we've got it on a picture. And then he tases him two more times when he's down, simply because he won't turn over and put his hands back. I would say.
The taser was actually shot three times.
Correct.
So he was tased first then fell to the ground and then was tased twice more.
Correct. Correct. And again, if I'm being repetitive, if you go to their policies, they say even if arguably, and I don't think this is the case, you can use the taser once, you have to stop at some point.
But this is not a case, I mean, we're looking at an excessive force claim under the Fourth Amendment, not a violation of policies.
Correct, Your Honor. Well, there is a Monell claim. I'm not going to address that unless the court has questions. So I would say that I would ask the court, I'm pretty much done with my argument. I would ask the court to simply affirm, at an absolute minimum, there's genuine issues of material fact on excessive force.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Regarding plaintiff counsel's last point, when he says that he tased him three times, that he, you know, just he basically wants to classify it as he just beat him up. I think the important thing here is that Officer Powers used elevating levels of force. He tried verbal commands. Plaintiff disregarded those. He tried to reach out and grab his arms. Plaintiff pulled away and started going across the parking lot. He then pulled out his taser, pointed it at him, and twice told him to put his hands behind his back and get down on the ground. And plaintiff refused. After he tased him, they wrestled for several minutes. Officer Powers was never able to get him restrained. I know he wants to say he was 60 years old and that he had heart problems and stuff like that, but that is the important point. There never came a time where he became compliant or Officer Powers was able to get him restrained. In the end, it took three officers to restrain him. So I don't think that it can be held to be unreasonable when all the levels of force he used all constitute non-deadly force, and he's using steadily increasing levels to try and get plaintiff to comply. And none of them ever worked. Tasing him did not work. He tried to, you know, use his weight to lay on him. He used knee strikes. That didn't work. Plaintiff still was trying to kick him off of him and use his legs to force himself up. He used what he termed as palm heel strikes to his neck.
But the photo shows a closed fist.
We admit that that's not clear from the video, so that would have to be, you know, plaintiff's testimony accepted as true. Plaintiff testified that he punched him one time. But then again, this court held in Carter versus Carter, 728 FedEx 419, jump site 420, that 3 to 4 modest punches while engaged in wrestling with a suspect are not unreasonable. Similarly, Brax versus City of Grand Rapids, 742 FedEx, Fed Appendix 952, jump site 956, says a single punch is not unreasonable when you're engaged, actively engaged with a suspect, as Officer Powers was here, and attempting to restrain him. And again, I come back to, he gave him warnings. It was clear to plaintiff that he was that he wanted to restrain him. And I don't think that, the rule can be that when an officer says, turn around, put your hands behind your back, that you can just run away.
Before your client got into all of that, he called for backup. Why didn't he just wait for backup? What was the necessity of?
Well, because he called for backup, the reason he couldn't wait is because that's when plaintiff started moving towards his truck. And he did not know why plaintiff was moving towards his truck.
But he knew who the guy was, where he lived, whatever.
Well, I don't think that would have done him any good if the things had been the way they could be of plaintiff having a weapon in the vehicle, and that's why he was moving towards the vehicle. He wanted him to stay away until his backup got there, but he couldn't because plaintiff started moving towards the truck, and he did not know why.
I'm not quite following that. When the force was applied against the plaintiff, he wasn't moving toward the truck. He was moving away from the truck. At some point, he was told not to go to the truck, so he ceased going to the truck and started going in the opposite direction of the truck. Only after that was force applied, so the truck didn't have anything to do with it in terms of whether he could have waited for backup. He was moving away from the truck. His daughter was across the lot, and that's he was going over there. He wasn't going to his truck. I'm not quite following you.
This was after he starts moving towards the truck. He tells him, turn around, put your hands behind your back.
He's shouting, don't go to the truck. So the man stopped going to the truck. When the altercation occurred, the man was moving away from the truck. He was backing across the lot to where his daughter was. He wasn't going to the truck.
This was after he'd been told, turn around and put your hands behind your back.
The question was, why didn't he wait for backup? And you said he couldn't because he was going to the truck. But he wasn't going to the truck.
I know. But in between then is when he told him, turn around, put your hands behind your back, and tried to arrest him.
Well,
that's when he starts moving towards his daughter.
Well, one thing we haven't even gotten into is a citizen required to obey an illegal order from a police officer. This whole thing started because there was a problem with the license plate on the daughter's car. That's how this whole incident kicked off. There was something wrong with the license plate on the daughter's car. The man comes, and because the officer and the plaintiff had a prior disagreement and didn't like each other, they start hurling insults at each other. And next thing we know, there's a physical fight where the officer has tased the man three times and is beating him up with his fist. Now, how do we go from a license plate violation to the man getting tased three times, and he's unarmed, he's not assaulting the officer, and he's getting beat up?
Well, the daughter is the one that had the license plate violation. As he's trying to impound her car from that, that's when plaintiff comes.
And really, he didn't even need to impound the car. He could have given her a citation and let her go on she couldn't drive the car, but he could have just given her a citation and required her to wait for a ride. But instead, he's going to impound the car. He's going to search the car to see if he can get her in more trouble by seeing if he can find some drugs or weapons and all that. And then when the father comes, he loses his temper and just starts yelling at the top of his voice in the most intemperate way. I mean, we don't expect police officers to behave like that.
Well, he had to impound.
And then it turns out he's got 14 complaints against him by citizens and was disciplined in seven of them. Although Mr. Schumacher wouldn't have known that, I guess he didn't know that at the scene of all these problems.
I understand that, Your Honor. He had to impound the car because the car had no tags and no insurance. He can't just leave it there to where she could come back and drive it away. It has to be impounded until they show proof that it's legal to be driven on the road. As far as everything else, I understand what Your Honor is saying. All I'm saying is that in my review of this court's decisions, Cockrell, Hagans, Rudloff, I don't think that there's any question in my mind that he's entitled to qualified immunity here. We have to keep in mind that these officers, like Officer Powers, they're not like you and me. They're not in a room where everyone that comes in front of them has been through a metal detector and been checked, and they have ample officers to protect them. He's out in the street dealing with somebody who's acting erratically. He has to make decisions on the fly. And the case law, I believe, takes that into account. And I don't think that when an officer says, turn around, put your hands behind your back, that it should be the case that somebody can simply run away And if the cop then uses non-deadly force to say, no, don't run away, you know, respond to my commands, that they cannot be entitled to qualified immunity.
And we appreciate your lengthy explanation in light of our lengthy questions, and your red light is on. So thank you very much for your argument. Thank you both for your argument, and the case will be submitted. Will the clerk